Is everything okay in there?
So disgusting.
No, this is perfectly natural. The food goes in and then it has to come out.
Of my butt.
Yeah. Do you want me to come in and help?
No, I got it.
Don't forget to wipe.
Yeah. You know,
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
This is Legion Cast, episode 11.
Chapter 11.
Do you know how I keep saying that I think Legion is like Noah Hawley trying to give us an experience of what it's like to be crazy, or trying to make us crazy, feel crazy?
Yes, he's successful.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's like, yeah, because you think you have an idea of what's going on, and then one thing comes up that makes you feel like maybe I'm wrong about everything. And I feel like podcasting about it is like trying to stay sane, because it's like trying to explicate and, you know, get your hands around what the fuck is going on. Yeah. And I realize that's part of my personality, where I just try to analyze everything. Maybe it's just so I can like have a handle on reality or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit exhausting with this show.
It is exhausting. It's mentally exhausting with this show. That's for sure. But I love it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm into this stuff, like psychology and human behavior and motivation and all that. I've always been into that.
Totally, me too. So I find it really fascinating, kind of analyzing and the not knowing, I guess, not really knowing, but not knowing exactly what's real. Is it a manifestation of like the illness, or is it the thought of illness that's made someone ill, like in this episode, or the human dynamic? I'm completely fascinated, and I feel that by the end of this season, I might be the one standing up in my room, with my teeth chattering.
Yeah, actually, not knowing is key to my enjoyment of this show, I think, because I'm trying to understand, but kind of conversely, when it becomes really clear what's going on, or if this is just a normal show like S.H.I.E.L.D. or something, it'd be boring as hell. Like, I love kind of not knowing for sure what's real and what's not. I mean, oh God, I don't know if people are even interested in this, but there's this thing where I feel like sometimes showrunners or writers or directors, they do things just to be weird and they don't really know what's happening. And I don't like that, but I think Noah Hawley, he's got a real handle on all this, but he knows how to withhold certain things or throw certain things in to throw a curve. But there's still, I feel like he has an understanding of it. So that's what I want. I want the creator of the show to have an understanding of what's going on, but be able to hide it from me so I can't figure it out.
Right. It'd be a little scary if Noah Hawley didn't know what the hell was going on.
Well, that's, I mean, like I always give Lost a hard time, but I feel like sometimes they didn't know. They just threw shit in there because it was weird. Or David Lynch, he doesn't know sometimes. So I don't know. Anyways. That's our intro. So let's get into our top five for the week. Top five highlights for Legion season 2, episode 3, chapter 11. Did you like it?
I did. This show just never disappoints me.
I know.
Like I said, I'm always thrilled. I don't think I've ever not liked any of the episodes, even from season 1. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it just came out of the gate running, and I feel like it's just picked up. I mean, there's different things happening. There's definitely a different, I think, narrative that's happening during this season than there was in the first one. Things are definitely different, but I like it. Mm-hmm. There's so much goodness about this show. I mean, this show for me is the trifecta. It's great visually, great sound, and great story.
Are you playing the harp?
I'm a happy girl. No, I'm not playing the harp.
Oh, I thought I heard a twang.
Sorry, it's probably my boom stand.
I was reading that someone was saying they thought this episode was bringing back some of the more horror elements of last season that the first two episodes kind of didn't have. And I was like, oh yeah, I didn't even notice that. But yeah, I remember feeling more creeped out last season. I mean, I guess it was last episode when Lenny was over by the bed and came out of the darkness with her yellow eyes.
That was, creeped the hell out of me, that last episode.
That was creepy. But the show isn't quite as creepy in that way this year, and I liked it when it was, but it's got so much else to offer, and I think it's funnier this year, so mm-hmm. that's fine. I mean, it can change a little. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they had a really creepy one, though. I like that kind of stuff, too.
Yep, I do, too.
All right, what's your number five?
Number five for me, again, I'm digging the narration, and this time we had it. I mean, as soon as the credits started rolling, even before they were done, we started into the cold open with the narration, and this one was for Contagion, and they were, well, not they, but John Hamm was talking about the nocebo effect, which just means that the human body has a negative physical reaction to a suggested harm. It shows that, I guess, like this nurse giving this guy this like just sugar water stuff and repeating over and over, this will make you vomit. This will make
I know.
You vomit. I thought I was going
to drink that. I guess, I mean, if you need to vomit, which you do sometimes.
I mean, you know. Yeah, it happens for a reason, I guess. You know, something needs to come out, but.
Yeah, they have, like, if you drink poison or if you eat something poisonous, you have to take something to make yourself throw up. But anyways, yeah. Should I tell my Ipecac story? Nah, fuck it.
No.
Anyways, that's not a good story. But anyways, so they kept saying that, and I'm like, we're about to see an old man vomit. I don't know if I want to see that. And then when the vomit came out, it was actually kind of pretty looking. It was all orange.
It was whatever he drank with that sugar water. It was a pretty color, but it was still disgusting. It's well, it was like, you know, I don't know, spoiler alert for that one episode of The Walking Dead, a couple episodes back, that one character, projectile.
Oh God, that was disgusting. All over another.
That was so disgusting. I just can't do that. But I love that whole narrative that we got, and I thought it was really interesting, the whole idea that an idea can take over and can also be caused by stress, and how the mind can create a physical reality. I just find that so fascinating because it's like, I'm such a believer in the mind over matter thing. Like if I've got a headache, I won't take anything for it. I'll just, most of the time, like I can just, like if I think about it enough, I can just make it go away on my own.
What do you think about? I mean, you focus on the headache?
I focus on my headache and it goes away.
Say go away or something like that?
I just try to focus on it not hurting, like it like my head doesn't hurt.
Oh, okay.
Instead of thinking about my head hurting, I think of it not hurting and not having a headache, and then my head stops hurting.
Your mind, I think your mind goes what you focus on. So if you just think, oh man, I feel so good.
So I found that whole narrative really fascinating because I was like, oh, I can feel like I can, at least in a very small way, kind of relate to that. And I really liked, you know, they were talking about that dancing plague and that laughter epidemic, the milk miracle, and those different stories that they, you know, how talking about like when one person yawns, why does another person yawn? I just thought it was really interesting. And I think it kind of relates a little bit of what we see happen in this episode where everybody kind of goes
into the chattering contagion or whatever.
Yeah.
That's
and
how
it
spreads. Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah, and he, one thing I'm not totally clear on, we saw the little delusion chick, I keep calling it, go inside Potonomy's ear,
demon
right?
Chicken.
And then when David went into Potonomy's mind, there was some black goo on the ground. And so what I'm not clear on is if that little chick is supposed to represent going into the maze, you know, being pulled into your own mind and having this, delusion for Potonomy that he didn't have any memories, or was that something else particular to Potonomy that we're going to see later where he's going to start having some kind of other delusions, you know? Mm-hmm. What do you see the difference? What do you think? I mean, I guess I think it probably just is a representation of what's happening to any of these chattering people when they go into their mind. It's not something else, but I don't know for sure.
Well, I don't know either. I don't know if that's that little demon slimy tar covered chicken is just a representation. Is it like a metaphor for them going into the maze of that he's getting ready to be infected by this, or did something really settle within him? Because we saw it go into David and Sid's room the first episode.
Right. Yeah, I think it might be something else that we've yet to really fully
see. Because we didn't see it anywhere. I didn't see it anywhere else.
I hope so.
I mean, did you see the little tar trail anywhere else during the episode besides when it went in Potonomy's?
I didn't see. I mean, Melanie's area was all black, so it would blend in pretty good there. But well, about this whole nocebo effect, I mean, it's pretty clear at this point that John Hamm is here to explain psychological concepts that are going to somehow play out in the series. Mm-hmm. That we had delusion, we had perception of reality, now we have this, what's called conversion disorder. And basically the nocebo effect seems the same as the placebo effect to me. It's that your thoughts can influence your physiology, but the difference is placebo, I guess, implies positive, and nocebo,
right, is negative.
That what it's called? Is somehow negative. Yeah. But yeah, that you mentioned the dancing plague of 1518. That's where in the Holy Roman Empire about 400 people started dancing for days without rest, and over a month many collapsed and some died of heart attack and stroke and stuff. Nuts. They were theorizing that it was actually food poisoning or something that caused it. Then the Hindu milk miracle. I'm not sure how this applies, but it's statues of the Hindu god Ganesha was said to drink milk offerings. How does that apply to this concept?
Because it happened to this one person when they were offering. They had like that little spoonful of milk and held it to the statue of Ganesha, and they told someone else, and they told someone else, and that is what kind of took hold.
They just believed it.
It said word of the event spread quickly, and by mid-morning it was found that statues of the entire Hindu pantheon and temples all over India were tanking in milk.
Well, if believing bullshit is a nocebo effect, then we're all contaminated. In this country.
No kidding.
In the whole world. But the one that really interested me was the Tanganyika laughter epidemic. So I want to read the whole entry because I just think it's fascinating. And later we saw the monks laughing, so I think it might directly apply. Mm-hmm. But the Tanganyika laughter epidemic in 1962 was an outbreak of mass hysteria rumored to have occurred in or near the village of Kashasha on the western coast of Lake Victoria in the modern nation of Tanzania. The laughter epidemic began on January 30th, 1962 at a mission-run boarding school for girls. The laughter started with three girls and spread haphazardly throughout the school, affecting 95 of the 159 pupils aged 12 to 18. Symptoms last for a few hours to 16 days in those affected. The teaching staff were not affected, but reported that students were unable to concentrate on their lessons. The school was forced to close down on March 18th. After the school was closed and the students were sent home, the epidemic spread to Nishamba, a village that was the home of several of the girls. In April and May, 217 people had laughing attacks in the village, most of them being school children. The Kashasha school was reopened on May 21st, only to be closed again at the end of June. In June, the laughing epidemic spread to Ramashenya Girls Middle School, affecting 48 girls. The school from which the epidemic sprang was sued for allowing the children and their parents to transmit it to the surrounding area. Other schools and another village comprising thousands of people were all affected to some degree. 6 to 18 months after it started, the phenomenon died off. The following symptoms were reported on an equally massive scale as the reports of the laughter itself: pain, fainting, flatulence, respiratory problems, rashes, attacks of crying, and random screaming. In total, 14 schools were shut down and 1,000 people were affected.
That is so crazy.
I know.
I read that and I'm
farting,
like,
farting and laughing.
That is one thing I do love about the show. They have introduced me to some new things. I had never heard of these, you know, until I watched the episode. So when I went and looked them up, I was just absolutely fascinated. I mean, we all know what nervous tics are, right? Or maybe not nervous tics, but like I feel like when I'm stressed out, I get like a tic in my eye. And it makes mm-hmm. me crazy. And that mm-hmm. I cannot make go away. I'm like, just stop it, stop it. I try to concentrate like on my headache and it will not stop. I'm like, okay, so you need to de-stress. That's the only way it's going to happen. But it's weird how that would be contagious to someone else.
Yeah. And John Hamm made a point to focus on these being stress-related, mm-hmm. which might be interesting to talk about later. But just a couple other things about this whole sequence is that I love that they had it visually shown by a bunch of poor cheerleaders because it's visually interesting and it's sadistic, like a lot of these, where you got these little innocent cheerleaders just trying to do their thing and then they're all fucked up.
Yep, can't even like, do a pyramid or hold any of the girls up because they're shoulders are jerking
around. Yeah, right. And they're trying to like console each other. No, it'll be all right. And she gets it too. It's like
dinner at the table and.
And then the idea that the idea of an illness can become an illness mm-hmm. itself, which is what he said. You know, he goes, if the idea of an illness can become illness, what else about our reality is a disorder? And to me, that also raised the question, well, what else about our reality is not necessarily, does it have to be the way that we all think mm-hmm. it is? Like, I'm always one to ask, is this the only way this could be, the natural way? Or is it something like we've arrived at as a society, but it's not necessarily the one true way? Kind of like how things that are taboo later become okay, like smoking pot lately. Mm-hmm. You know, several years ago, it was seen as a criminal activity. Now it's becoming more legitimate throughout the country. Yeah.
And actually has medicinal qualities for some folks, you know, yeah. can help people.
And some people still have think negative connotations about it, but I think that's sort
just
of
their
changing.
Way of thinking.
And yeah, or just racist views become less common, gay marriage, all these things. So I think a lot of times people tie their truth to whatever they feel mm-hmm. and they think, if I feel this way about it, they don't even think about it, but it just seems like I feel this way, so it must be like gross because I think it's gross or I think it's great. And so I just think it's good to try to take a step back sometimes and question things, you know?
Yeah, definitely questioning reality, because that's, I think, what we get into whenever, like, Patonomy and the rest of them, you know, they are prisoners of their own minds. And it's like whenever mm-hmm. Carrie was telling David, he's like, you know, like, well, where are we? And he's like, well, I think we're in his mind. And he goes, is this real? And he goes, well, for him, it is. For him, this is his reality. And it's like, we make our own realities and we can change our reality.
Yeah, and I love that, I don't know if I'm reading the right thing into this, but David is able to get them out, and it's harder to get Melanie out, but I think, you know, he tried to just brute force his way through it with his powers, and he couldn't, mm-hmm. so he had to instead try to figure her out and kind of help her, kind of like a therapist would, and I just like that, because it's almost like, you know, when you're stuck in your own problems, mm-hmm. then it's harder for you to see your own way out. But you get someone else who can see it from more of a bird's eye view, or doesn't have the same blindnesses and hangups that you do. Like, that's why it's always good to just have a friend that can help you get a clearer picture of something or give you advice. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how that translated for me, that whole thing.
Yeah, I love it.
So what's your number four?
Number four is the Carrie-Carrie relationship. I think we're getting a little bit more. I think we got glimpses of it in season one. We kind of understood a little bit of how they kind of work and how they merge and how they like cohabitate inside of male Carrie. But I think that we're getting a little bit more perspective into their relationship now that it seems like she's living more outside of them. And I don't even know if they figured it out from the last episode, whenever they kind of flipped and he was inside of her, and that was a whole new experience. I don't know if they quite figured out how to kind of merge correctly together by now, but she's living more outside of male Carrie, and I think that he's trying to teach her to kind of be more independent, that if something happens to him, that she would be able to continue and be able to do things. Because we learn she doesn't eat, she doesn't go to the bathroom. You know, she only likes to come out for the physical stuff and the fun stuff, she calls it. So I thought it was really what she calls the fun stuff. I'd see kicking ass as fun too. So I can totally relate. But I thought it was cute how he's teaching her to eat. He's introducing her to foods, and she's just so grumpy, and like the way she was holding her chopsticks, you know?
Yeah, it's like a little kid. Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of maybe a mistake to have one of the first foods be what was it, like a Chinese dumpling, dumpling.
Yeah, some type of dumpling.
A little
yeah.
exotic, maybe try some peanut butter and jelly or a hamburger. But then when she gets the cream soda, she's like, oh, more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly like a kid's kind of reaction a little bit. I mean, you said it right. Like she's older. She's like 40 years younger than Carrie, but she's, you know, and she's technically an adult, but, you know, as far as doing these types of things, she's very much, you know, still childlike and learning these things. Yeah. So it was just adorable to kind of see that. And yeah, you're right. Should have given her like a grilled cheese or some chicken nuggets or something. Right.
Some ketchup.
Because I thought the same thing. She's like, she was turning her nose at him. She's like, it's fishy. And I'm like,
yeah.
I totally get that. So I thought it was really funny.
I like that. I would love that food, but my son wouldn't. My 6-year-old. Yeah.
Well, and I don't like it either. so I mean, I was like, yeah, I'm with you, Carrie. I don't want none of that either. I don't care what you're dipping it in.
So you want to go out for some chicken nuggets later?
I could do some chicken nuggets or some grilled cheese or some pizza. Pizza and tacos.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's my thing. That's my weakness. I probably shouldn't have told everyone that, and everybody's going to be throwing me pizza and tacos. but I thought it was really interesting to see their relationship and their dynamic of how he's trying to teach her to be more independent, because maybe he's feeling, I don't know that he really thinks that their cohabitation and the way that they're like so interdependent is unhealthy or anything. I think he's just trying to teach her to be more on her
own. It's safety. Yeah. It's about safety.
Yeah. Because
he said based on what happened last year. So I'm not sure exactly what that maps to, but I just get the sense that he's like, this is for your own good.
Well, I think because they all were, because it was a little bit more scary and threatening.
They were separated. Yeah, they couldn't.
And then he could have died.
Right.
And what if he had died and she hadn't learned to be on her own?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't want that for her, and he's scared for her. And then, of course, the whole going to the bathroom thing, you know, as he's waiting outside, she's going to the bathroom, just, you know, when he's talking about.
This is gross.
Yeah, he's like, well, food comes in and it has to leave the body. And she's like, through my butt. And he's hollering at her, don't forget to wipe. I mean, as a parent, that's hilarious.
It's such a little kid thing. Yeah, it's like she's a little kid.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has kids, that's what you're yelling at your kids through the bathroom door. Don't
she
forget to wipe.
She hasn't had to do these things.
No, but it was super, super cute, I thought. I love both of them together.
Yeah.
And I think they're really sweet with each other, and this just kind of expands on that relationship that we've seen, and I love seeing it. I hope we get to see more.
I know. I think the storytellers realized, oh, we kind of touched on this relationship last year and it was great every time, so let's really dig into it. And it's sweet and it's funny and it's weird and interesting. And if they had told me they were going to do this, or, you know, announced it, I'd be like, I'm not sure that's going to work based on what we saw last year, because they didn't feel like they really connected. But it's this year, it's a whole different story. I think it's really fun to watch.
Yep, I agree. They've got a really great chemistry, those two actors together.
Yeah.
And they have a really sweet connection, even just on the show. They have a really sweet connection, like when he found her in the hallway and she was in the maze and her teeth were chattering, and he just was so heartbroken over that. So
he should have realized David could save her.
Well,
he saved everyone else.
Yeah, he did, but I don't know. I have a question about that later, which I'm sure we'll kind of get to, and hopefully I'll remember to ask it later. But I thought it was, you know, he was so upset and just seemed so destroyed and heartbroken, and he thought, well, maybe if they try to like merge or whatever that they do together, that maybe he can either take it away for her or help her or bring her back or something. And then he just disappeared. I thought that was interesting. I thought, where did he go?
Yeah, because he couldn't get in.
Yeah,
so
he kept trying him, so
like
it was real sweet.
He wasn't. Yeah, and he said he was sorry, so it seemed like he knew what he was doing. So
yeah.
I don't know what happened there.
I don't think
we're supposed to.
I don't know. I don't think we're supposed to, but it's just like, oh, God, well, what happened? That wasn't their typical merging thing. So that's
we'll
my
fine.
Number four.
Well, that goes with my number four, which is how this show, I love that this show kind of humanizes superpowers. So what I mean by that is, you know, if you have powers, you're going to get into some weird circumstances that normal people don't get into. Like, you're going to be an old scientist that has this young athletic woman that merges into your body, you know, or you're going to be able to turn into a cat. And instead of just having action and fighting and conflict, they'd have small moments of what would people really be like if they were in these situations? And everything you just described about Carrie and Carrie falls under that category, just the awkwardness of teaching someone how to go to the bathroom. Or when Sid's a cat, David's like in his mind to her, because telepathy is part of this too, not just her power of switching places. He's is it weird being a cat? And she goes, there are certain impulses I have to resist. And I love that. Like, I would ask that, you know, if
what's it like being a cat?
If you were a cat, I'd be like, what is that like? I want to be a cat. And it made me wonder what those impulses are. Like, I sometimes when somebody's petting me, I just want to turn around and start scratching them or something like that. Or I want to piss all over everything. Need a ball of yarn. Yeah, right. Yeah, somebody like threw a ball of yarn in front of me and I just wanted to grab it and swat at it. And then what else? Well, I kind of already mentioned it, but the thing, yeah, I did mention it, just the thing about how it would be easier for an outsider to help you get out of your own mental maze feels like something when friends are helping each other suss things out. So those are just a few examples, but the show does it all the time. And I think it's really, really cool because it could easily just not bother with the human element of all this.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They might be mutants, but they're still human, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
So my number three is more like a question, and that's just like what's happening with Lenny. When David went to the altered plane to find Farouk and talk to him, and he doesn't find him, but finds Lenny instead. We kind of got a glimpse a little bit in the last episode where she's like begging the Shadow King to like, let her go, get me a body, let me go. You don't need me anymore. You know, you've done your thing. And he, you know, he's not done with her yet for whatever reasons we don't know. And he isn't letting her go. And I thought it was really interesting to see, you know, how she was like trying to kind of swing David back around into her favor, into either helping her or help me commit suicide. She's like, I'm going, it's like, she's just going completely crazy.
She's miserable. And
yeah, she's miserable. She's like, you know, I'm like a pet or a houseplant. And she's just miserable. She wants to, you know, either just be put out of her misery or she wants to be alive again in a real body. And and I thought it was interesting. It's like, is she being driven mad by being trapped there? Or is that way she was acting a part of her illness before? And it's just kind of coming out more like whenever she was in the hospital in the beginning of season one. And the clock works.
I mean, she's acting like an addict. The first thing she did is give me something. And then she pretended to have an interest in him, but it was clear that she was just desperate for help. And that was all fake. And but my take on it is saying I'm like a house pet or a plant is saying, or a pet or a house plant is saying I need tending to, and I'm just stuck here. And, I think the only reason Shadow King has her there is because he's a sociopath and he's just doesn't give a shit. He doesn't have a conscience and he can use her image. And I don't know, totally understand how that works, but I don't really think he has some plan in mind with her. I just think he doesn't give a shit about her. And she just wants to get out and live a life or else, you know, end it all.
Right. Well, and so how did you, cause she was telling David, she's like, you know, I pulled out my hair and it all came back. And then we see her as David and Farouk are talking, you can see her at the angle. You see them from the side face to face. And then you see, if you look in the back, you see her by the pool and she's hanging there above the pool. And then you see her another, like the scene cuts and you see David and Farouk kind of face to face and it cuts from side to side again. And you see Lenny then take this gun and like shoot herself in the head, but it's like just bubbles, but she falls down anyway. And I thought, okay, is she doing that to herself, trying to take herself out? Or is that Farouk like making her do it to, like as a form of torture over and over again, because he is such a psychopath that he's doing this to her over and over again.
I think she's trying to do it to herself, but no matter what she does, nothing changes. That's why she said, I pulled my hair out and it grew back. It's just fruitless efforts and it just stays the same.
Yeah, I just didn't know. Yeah, that's what I thought, because I thought, well, she talked about how she pulled all of her hair out and it grew back, so I didn't know if she was doing that to herself or if maybe he was making her do that.
I mean, making her crazy. The fact that she was trying to get David to end it for her and then she looked like shot herself, but it was bubbles, which to me says that didn't do anything. That's why I'm guessing that she's trying real hard to make something happen, but it's no good. And Shadow King is totally the master of this domain, but I haven't seen him. It's not clear to me that he's actually like tried to torture her. The torture is just that she's there and under his control, but I don't know.
Prisoner.
Yeah. Prisoner.
Locked in this altered plane.
Used.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. That's my number three.
Okay. Mine is the mazes of our minds. So David comes out of the tank after talking with Farouk there, and everyone is in the division is frozen with their teeth chattering, and David says they're in the maze, which is a call back to John Hamm's first voiceover about this maze 100 miles long and 1,000 miles wide in your mind. Welcome to insanity. So now I think that monologue was kind of a representation of this infection that has been going around. I didn't realize that at the time, but anyways, it's interesting to see each person. So Patonomy is a gardener that's dressed stylishly and
sharp dressed man.
Yeah. And it's about them being trapped in there kind of by this alluring or safe fantasy. So his fantasy is that he has no memories because he's plagued by remembering everything, which is a plague. It would be a plague. It would be awesome in some cases, but in a lot of cases it would be really annoying, I think.
Yeah. Agreed.
But anyways, then it was interesting that David could just go right into his mind too. Like David has mastery over, I don't know if I would say mastery, but a lot more mastery over his powers now. Like he can just enter people's minds. He can bring Patonomy out. He says he did a little thing in their minds to make them immune.
Yeah, that was odd.
He can look around the premises and see who's there and talk to them via telepathy. He can teleport, we saw. He can go to this plane of existence where Shadow King is on. He needs the help of the tank. But anyways, I'm kind of getting off topic. So Melanie, they think Melanie's desires to be all powerful and in control, so she's removed. And it was them playing Zork, which is a favorite game of mine. I mean, it's not exactly Zork, but it's this text adventure. That's a genre of games from the 80s, kids, where all you did was type what you wanted to do. You're in a cave.
I remember those kinds of games.
Yeah, and even Zork, I think, did have a Minotaur, and there was a maze in Zork that was impossible. Like, you in these games, you type north, go north, go south, whatever, and then you go to the next area and it describes it. And when you're in this maze, you could type go north and you go north and it says this is an area of the maze, it's nondescript like any other. And then you type go south thinking you're going to go back where you just were, and it says there's no exit that way. And you're like, fuck, man, how do I get out of here?
Which is exactly what happened to them.
Yeah, but I love it. Just took me back to those were some of my favorite games. So that was really fun. And I like that he tried, this is where his power wasn't enough. He was like, I don't have time for this. And he tried to manifest some kind of look like a light that was going to just light up the whole area and find
that
Melanie.
That was cool looking though.
It was cool. And then it didn't work and you see the dead end. And then, so he had to think his way out of it, and it was super clever. And so what did he do? He played her game. He typed into the keyboard, once upon a time there was a girl with no dreams. She lived in the right now. Then she met a boy and his dreams became hers. That's Oliver, obviously. Except what he didn't realize was she already had a dream, and that dream was to be carefree. So I guess I had to think about it a little, but if Patonomy's curse is remembering everything, so his fantasy is to be always in the moment and not have a memory, then I think Melanie's is to have a lot of responsibility on her shoulders. And so her, like, the allure would be to just have that weight lifted and be carefree. That's what I came up with anyway. So that drew her out.
Well, I think that makes sense, because when she was talking about that, when Oliver disappeared, she continued on with what his dream was. This was his dream, and she took that on while he was gone for those 20 plus years. And I mean, that can't be easy. She was like a leader for these people, and she built all of this up and just essentially took it over, and it's not even what she wanted. So number one, she's doing something she didn't want to do, but she was doing it in his memory, his honor, whatever, and carrying on while he was absent. So yeah, that's, you know, probably just added to the stress, and probably why she was so unreachable whenever, you know, they did go look for her, because she wasn't just like Patonomy stuck in her own mind. She's got some deeper issues going on already with Oliver having disappeared again after just getting him back. So she's got like deeper stuff going on. So I think that was why it was more of a challenge, and he had to be a little bit more clever and couldn't just, use his power to get her out.
And it was clever, and it made me think Oh, I guess he really sees her. He knows her issues. And I don't know if that's in part maybe because he's a mind reader,
Yeah.
or maybe he's just a really observant guy, but I mean, it was effective. The only other one we got a glimpse of, well, before I go into that, I'll say Carrie, he was awake and conscious. I don't know if that like lemon pledge he sprayed it in his face or what. But maybe he was immune because he's now the part of the duo that goes inside the other one. I don't know. Why was he not chattering away?
I don't know. He, besides the kids, it looked like everyone else there at Division Three was affected and or affected, infected, however you want to look at it, by this teeth chattering. So I'm not sure.
So, I mean, I thought maybe like when you're the one that it doesn't have a permanent existence on the physical plane, because Carrie and Carrie, I think they're reversed, right? That he goes into her, maybe he
She goes
got
into
what
him, though. He's the one that's always physically present.
they, yeah, but they switched it last
Well, just,
episode.
but that was an accident.
No, I mean, when the Shadow King messed with them, then their powers became reversed. Remember, you saw his hand coming out of her chest, and then after that, he had to go into her, and I don't think they ever switched it back again.
Right, they haven't switched it back, but that's what it was normally, was she always went into him and he was the one that was always physically present.
Yeah,
And that's
and what I'm saying is now it's reversed. So now
right.
he's the one who's not always physically present, and so maybe that's why he's immune. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe. It's possible.
I mean, it doesn't totally make sense, but that's all I could come up with. And then the last one, of course, is Sid, which we see David go into her mind at the end, and there's a snowstorm. And I look at the video, and it says there's like 4 minutes left. I'm like, all right, what's it gonna see? And then it just ends, and there's like a long end credit. So it's like, damn it.
It was very abrupt. They always kind of leave us a little bit of a cliffhanger, it seems, but that was a very abrupt. Like, it seemed like there should have been like another at least 30 seconds, at least a minute, something happening there, but nope, just cut to
Well, I
black.
definitely want to know what he's going to see in there. And then I want someone to go in his mind.
I don't want to go into David's mind at all. That I think that is a super scary place. I was interested though, talking about the blizzard, when or the snowstorm blizzard, whatever you want to call it, whenever he was in Sid's mind there at the end. I don't know if it was just something on the screen that I was watching, but I thought I saw something in the background, like on behind David a little bit, where it looked like maybe a shape of like some sort of like a house or something with a light.
I didn't notice. You
So
notice more stuff than I do. I have noticed like that visual.
I don't. Well, it could be nothing. It could have just, I mean, it could have been there was maybe a glare on my screen or something that just, because I was like, wait, is there something there? And then boom, it went black. And I was like, oh crap. And I only got to watch it a couple times and I didn't get a chance to go back and watch it again. I could be wrong, but I thought I saw a little something there. It might just be nothing, but I just wonder if that would have something to do with it, like a light in the fog or something, like a lighthouse type of, go here. Kind of thing that might draw him.
I'm sure.
So
Yeah,
I
I
don't
bet
know.
you it does.
But I could just be seeing things. Wouldn't be
What
the
is
first
it?
time.
What would that be? Her she doesn't get to touch anyone, and that's frustrating for her. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe that could be related to just low visibility in a storm, but I'm not sure exactly how.
Well, my number two is pretty much the same as your number three, and I think we covered most of it. I was just kind of going over a couple of notes. I like how Carrie referred to Ptolemy's his garden area that he was at. He's like, it's the floral astral plane. Like you said, like you were saying earlier, how the season seemed to have a little bit more funny moments than the first one. First one did, so I thought that was just a funny line. And I think that's about all of my other notes. The Minotaur made another appearance, so I guess that
And it was still in
we
a dog wheelchair.
I know they said it again. They was like, why was it in a doggy
Let's get
wheelchair?
out of here.
Let's go. I thought that was hilarious. I'm like, I'm asking the same question. That was what I was asking from the when we saw it the first time, and that thing creeped me out. That thing looks like it's something from a twisted horror video game or something. Creepy. That thing's messed up.
Both times related to Melanie, so I wonder if it's connected to her somehow.
I mean, it was in her room. She's all doped up over Oliver, and then it's in her mind. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if that thing makes an appearance. That thing's creepy. I don't like it. But anyway,
it's probably
that's
nice.
Yeah, I'm sure. He doesn't want to hurt anybody with those messed up crutches and doggy wheelchair and that weird mask looking thing he's got on his face.
I thought you were an animal lover.
That thing is not an animal. That is some twisted
creature.
Yeah, mutant thing. I don't know. I don't like it. But we pretty much covered it in your number three, because that's my number two, is just the maze and everyone, what was happening in their minds.
Okay, my number two is we get to see a lot more of this monk and the other monks, and also the story of, well, where Farouk's body is, and even we flash back to the scene of Farouk's defeat, which is like he's sitting there with these two women fawning all over him, and he's got this pained look on his face, even though he has his glasses. Then you see the reflection of the fight between him and Professor X on the astral plane, which I think they just took right from the same art from the classroom scene.
Yeah, that mental chalkboard from season one. Yeah.
Where English accented David was explaining it. So then his body's placed into this big white egg looking thing, which I think is interesting. Like, they've talked about an egg being an idea, but then it matters what's inside, and you get the sense that, oh well, yeah, there's something pretty dark inside there. And then he's taken to this monastery, and there was some weird looking guy that kind of facilitated that, right? Short guy. I think we're gonna see this guy again, but he's I think he's the one that handed over the body to the monks. Anyway, so they lower him into the floor and sever that rope and cover up the floor, and later they decide, oh, we're gonna have to go to Division 3 to find a weapon to use against the monster, which I assume means Farouk's body. And so that's what the monk is doing there. And it turns out, I don't think he was thinking of David as this weapon. I think Fukuyama was supposed to be developing a weapon, but they, like he said, there were other things that came up and we forgot about it. Because the monk doesn't trust David. Mm-hmm. And so his mission was fruitless. He didn't find the weapon he needed. So he killed himself. Earlier he had said, we don't fear death. But the question is, what is the threat posed by Farouk's body? And at one point, the monk had kidnapped David using these children's soldiers that he had gotten by singing like this Pied Piper song or something. Mm-hmm. And then he shows him a vision. I couldn't understand what was happening the first time through, but I think I got it, that he actually showed him a vision of what it's like at the monastery, either in the past, the present, or maybe the future. That's not clear, but you see it as David, but really it's like David inhabiting this guy's body. And what is in there is you see this, you hear this constant pounding inside that egg, mm-hmm. like the body's trying to get out. I don't know if that's a physical thing or a mental thing. It's a little confusing because Farouk's consciousness is separated from the body. So is this just the body has an evilness to it or a psychic residue or something?
I was
right?
confused too, because it's like his body, it's I guess technically almost like dead, because his physical or like his mental, he's not there mentally. Right.
But
if
they
he
can't
was there
burn
mentally,
it or drown it, they said.
Right, so they can't destroy it. But there's something, there's something still lingering.
A force there.
Somehow.
Yeah,
in that body.
And you even see like fist bump,
yeah, like something from the inside.
Trying to get out.
Yeah.
And
that was cool.
It seemed like, they're all just trying to do their monk thing and chanting and being peaceful, but that annoying pom, pom, pom is happening in the background. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't know if it's the pounding or if it's the presence or what, but it's driving them nuts. They're having the Tanganyika laughter epidemic. They're hanging themselves. Their teeth are chattering. So I think they realize that all of the badness that's happening is because they have Farouk's body there and they need to go and get rid of it. And Melanie suggests David as the weapon, but I really don't think that's what the monk had in mind. Farouk suggests that the monk is the one who's causing this teeth chattering contagion. He said he's been following this monk around, and so all of David's friends think it's him, but they're stupid. And even David says to the monk, stop making people sick. And the monk says, people don't matter, only the body. But based on this vision that the monk showed David, how they're all going nuts, I kind of wonder if the Shadow King's body infected the monks, and now maybe they are carriers or they're infected, and so they pass it along, but it's originated with him, you know? And he's just full of shit when he's trying to tell David that it's them.
I think, yeah, in some capacity he is full of shit. But I think the monk is spreading it, like he says, but I think it did begin with him.
I do too, yeah.
And I feel like that last monk, it seems he's the last monk standing there at D3. It looks like all of them, like it completely wiped out this monastery, and he is somehow infected, but he's like that Typhoid Mary that he doesn't get sick. He's like the carrier.
He's dead now.
But he doesn't, he's dead now. Maybe. But yeah, by his own, yeah, but I don't know that it was like the same kind of madness that drove the rest of the monks to off themselves or go into laughing fits. He took himself out so they couldn't get the information from him on where Farouk's body was located.
Right. So do you think that was all, that vision was in the past?
I think it was the past. I think he allowed, because David couldn't penetrate the monk's mind on his own. The monk had to let him in. He had to like somehow allow him to come in because he, you know, the monks had some sort of special way to like block their thoughts, and they had like the psychological ability to block that. So he had to allow him in and show him, let me show you what happened, what it was like for us, and why we need to destroy his body.
And even after that, David still, he doesn't care. He's committed to future Sid, and he just wants to find the body so he can give it back to Farouk. And he kind of tells the monk, I'll destroy it. And he's like, no, you will not.
He had a great voice.
Yeah, he did. So anyway, and we see this little last thing I had on this. We see the monastery, and it looks like it's out in a desert. And future Sid had said that David would kill Shadow King in the desert. So I wonder if it's outside the monastery and if we'll see like a battle there or something.
Yeah, and I didn't pay attention to what it looked like, if it changed, the scenery had changed or not. But David seemed to say something about the monk, or something to the monk about how, well, now valley. It's a desert. Yeah, like it's a valley, but now it's a desert. I don't know.
I thought maybe said it was both.
Maybe I misunderstood that.
A valley. I was wondering about that too, but I don't know. We can't take anything for granted, but it seems like if this is about where they took the physical body of Farouk Amal, then it would need to be a real place and not on the mental plane.
Right. No, I didn't mean like the mental plane. I just mean like did somehow over time his body being there change the outward appearance of it? Like he somehow was able to make it change, whether it was actually mentally or actually if it physically changed, like poison, like he poisoned the area around him and made it desolate and desert like or something.
Interesting.
Where I was kind of going kinda with that. Like I don't know, but I was taking notes, so I might have missed
Sauron
something there.
In the all around him is all charred out and everything.
Right. Yeah. Just rings. Like because he's so powerful that somehow he was able to physically change the just the whole scenery and geography of the place or something.
What's your number one?
My number one is actually Farouk himself and his whole story. Gosh, this actor, I'm never going to get his name right, but I think he is so great as Farouk in the Shadow King and whatever you want to call him. I know he's not good and he's done some bad things. And I do think he's totally bullshitting David, you know, and he's like, you know, hey dude, I just want to live, you know?
Yeah. I'm your brother.
Yeah. So, but he's so damn charming with that accent. I mean, I was totally falling for it. I was like, dude, we got to get your body. We got to get you. We got to get you out of here. He was just, I was all over it. So I just thought it was interesting how he's just trying to relate to David. And he's like, you know, I just want to live. I just want to get my body back. I just want to get back to women and living life. He's like, I'm not a villain. He goes, do you even really know what that word means? Tells him it means peasant. He said, do I look like a peasant? You know, he's all sharply dressed and, you know, he's smiling all throughout while he's telling this, you know, or this narrative to David and trying to, you know, kind of bring him around. And I thought it was really interesting that, you know, that we keep hearing him being called the Shadow King, and it sounds like he was really a king.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't understand. I don't know a lot of the...
If you can believe what he says, yeah.
Yeah, if you can believe what he says, you know, of course. And I don't know if that kind of comes out in the comics or not. I get tidbits about comics, but I haven't read them. So I don't know if
that's... I don't think so.
But I thought that was kind of interesting where he talks about being a real king. He was talking about the meaning of things. How can someone from the outside know better than what is right for his people when he's talking about Charles Xavier?
Yeah, he's painting Professor X as like this white colonialist who just goes in and doesn't have any regard for people's culture and stuff like that.
Right. Like how does this outsider know what's best for our people and my people? And I thought that was really interesting. And David is still not quite convinced, and he's like, you took over my friends' lives and their bodies. You took over, you took Lenny, you took Oliver, you took me whenever I was a baby. And he just kind of shrugs a little, and he's like, well, you know, the choice of death or life, I chose life. So I thought that whole exchange between them was really interesting, that we kind of get to know that character. And, you know, you look at him and what are you really expecting to say, really? Because nobody's a villain in their own story, in their own narrative, right?
Well, yeah, but he could be not a villain, but he's knowingly bullshitting David. He knows.
Oh, totally.
Like some people, you know, he might be telling his story and not, and think he's trying to tell his story and think that he's coming from the right place. But I don't think that's what Farouk is doing. I think he's consciously trying to manipulate David because,
right.
You know,
I agree.
Saying that, I chose life. What else would you do? Well, yeah, maybe you could choose life, but you didn't have to terrorize the kid for his whole life and send yellow-eyed monsters after him. And you don't have to trap Lenny. You know, it's pretty clear that he has the power to give her another body. And so he's painting a picture. So because of those two things, I don't believe anything he says about being a benevolent leader. You know, he's trying to paint a picture that's just not true. He just comes off as a total sociopath to me that doesn't have a conscience. And, you know, just, and he's saying that he's going to have women in power, but you know, it sounds relatively small if he gets his body back. But this is like the flip side of how this show humanizes superpowers is, well, with a sociopath, if he gets his powers back, he's gonna get as much dominance and control as he has. And like the monks say, this will be the end of everything if he gets his body back. And I kind of believe that.
Right. And I mean, I wasn't trying to make him sound like he wasn't a villain. I'm just saying it sounds like this is just what he believes. From his perspective, he's not a villain. He thinks he was doing the right things.
I don't agree with you. I don't think he believes what he's saying. Maybe he... No, I don't even think so. I think he... I don't even know if he believes he's not a villain. I don't know.
Well, that's probably part of what makes him a psychopath. Psychopaths don't think that they're psychopaths.
Yeah, they do. What? I think. Well, I mean, I don't know. My frame of reference from that is there's this woman on Quora, you know, Quora,
mm-hmm.
who does these like ask a psychopath and she'll answer. So she thinks she's a psychopath. I don't know if she really is, but she'll answer your questions.
I just think it's hard to tell, really. I think he truly believes that he's a good guy. Just like David, you know, I don't know. He doesn't see himself as a villain. I'm not saying he's not. I just don't think he really thinks that he is. I do think he is bullshitting David to sway him. I think he's trying to humanize himself. You know, he's, you know, all we've known is the Shadow King is this evil, powerful mutant, and he's done all of these terrible things. And it's like he's this, you know, I think he's trying to humanize him and try to get him on his side so that way he will help him find his body. So I think it's, I mean, maybe a mixture of both, that he's BSing him, but at the same time, I think he doesn't really, I think he thinks he did good.
Okay. Let's say you're right that he doesn't think of himself as a villain, but if he's telling David, if I get my body back, I'm just going to go to the south of France and have women and money and that's it. And David says no supervillainy stuff. And he says no, but what his real plan is to try to take over the world. Then how does that square with him not thinking of himself as a villain?
If he thinks that he's like the best solution for ruling the world.
Okay. But he wouldn't want to tell David that because he just knows that David wouldn't buy it. And what if his solution is, I'm going to crush anyone who doesn't agree with me and make everyone do what I want?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
Because that's what I think. That's what I think he's up to. Just pure evil, pretty much. We'll see.
Right.
We'll see.
I think he is evil. I don't think he has good intentions. I just think he thinks he has good intentions. He doesn't see himself as bad.
I don't know. I guess the only way that I could see someone like that and have, from their point of view, think that they're not bad is like a psychopath who doesn't value other people. So they think they don't matter. Like, I could kill this person and it just doesn't matter because they're nothing. And so they don't think of themselves as bad because they think, it's like stepping on an ant. It's no big deal. Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's like that. I could see him being like that. Is that what you mean?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause that's what I think he's like. I don't think he values other people. I think he thinks they're just insignificant. So if he were to kill someone, it wouldn't be a bad thing because it's like killing an ant.
Right.
Okay. Any notes?
I have a few. Let's see. One thing that I really thought stood out, well, it always to me stands out. And I mentioned how, like, for me, this show is like the trifecta of like visuals and sound and story. And I really love the visuals in this particular episode. I really liked when we had that scene with David and Farouk. Farouk is sitting over on that sun chair and he's just lounging and having a great time. And he is still, but the camera shifts back and forth. And then it goes to David and David is standing still, but the camera is shifting like back and forth. I got so much motion sickness during those few minutes that it was hard to watch. But I love how they use that effect. Because I think it's supposed to kind of throw you a little off balance and kind of make you remember that, you know, where they're at and what's happening between that exchange between the both of them. So I really like that. I really liked it when David was in Ptolemy's mind and he touched his finger to his forehead. And, you know, they're in this beautiful rose garden and he touches his forehead and you start seeing those rose bushes just like exploding off to the side and coming up from the ground. I thought that was just a beautiful visual because it was in a little bit like slow motion, and I thought that was really, really cool, like this destruction in this place of beauty. So I thought just that dynamic between, you didn't notice those,
go back and watch it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, how could you miss that?
I don't know.
These rose bushes and this dirt flying and roses were flying all over the place. So you're surrounded by this beauty, but yet you have this kind of ugliness of those roses being destroyed. And I thought that was kind of interesting and just this really awesome way that they can present these scenes. And then I thought it was really beautiful. You mentioned whenever David was typing the story when they were in Melanie's mind. And I love how the words were just kind of dancing across, I guess mm-hmm. considered the computer screen or up on the wall, whatever you want to call it, but how it just kind of played out along the wall and how the words just to me danced. And I thought that was really beautiful.
And then they fell into it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Onto the sort of page with the letters.
Yeah, that was super cool. And again, one more thing I have to mention, I feel like it wouldn't be prudent if I didn't bring this up, is the cow. I don't think what's up with the cow?
I don't think we know. I love it that that Carrie is offended by the cow.
Don't want to leave the cow in my lab.
Don't touch anything.
Well, and I thought what was really funny is every time they come around a corner or walk into a room and that cow's there, they stop and they stare and they go, cow.
And their lives are so crazy that it's still a little weird even what they're normally used to, but then they're just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, they're just like, why is the cow here? But they don't have time to worry about why the cow is there. Where did it come from? They got to go save all these people. And it just cracked me up how every time I saw it, they were like,
yeah.
Cow.
If you go to India, it's sort of like that, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, not for the Indians because they're used to it, but because, you know, I was on vacation there and they just show up everywhere on the beach, in the middle of the street, just cows everywhere.
Yeah. I haven't been there, but I've heard.
Okay, the only other note I had is just I wonder if they had to do some CGI for some of the chattering, because I can't do it that fast. Can you?
No.
That's about as fast as I can do it. Because like Carrie, girl Carrie, she was going really fast.
Mm-hmm. They had to do something because you're not supposed to really chatter your teeth like that either. It's not.
It's not good for them.
No, it's not good for them.
I chew on ice sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. Not supposed to do that, though.
I know. All right. That's it for our coverage of this episode. Let's get into some news.
Okay. So news for this week. This first one that we have is from Marvel News. And this was taken from an interview with Bill Irwin and Amber Midthunder. And, of course, those are our two Carries. So recently on the series, things have been changing for them, including a crisis in last week's episode that found Carrie instead be absorbed within Carrie, female Carrie, which resulted in a notable change in appearance. Discussing the duo, Irwin said, "They're ever evolving and it's really interesting. In season two, things have happened between these two characters that inhabit one body so that we're forever feeling out our duality. But at the same time, we as a storytelling group, this production, we're going back and looking at this proposition and getting a second chance to take it on. Last year, as with all first seasons, we hit the ground running. Amber and I were merged. Now we're figuring out what that means for us as characters and for us as storytellers and how that plays out." Said Midthunder, "I think before season one, the two of them had their life before where they each played roles in their unit. If the two of them are one piece, they each had their territories that they covered in life and they could do that. And then David came in and it continued, but it really forced them to look at themselves and called into question. Are they two people who are dependent on each other? Is it okay? Are they truly unhealthy? Are they codependent? And is it a problem? I think it called into question a lot of things about their relationship and their living situation, and that can't be ignored." Midthunder noted that for Carrie, male Carrie, when it came to these issues, "I think if it were up to her, she'd ignore it. She'd be like, it's fine. I'm happy with the way things are. I have this. I have you. We're okay." Like he had that moment last season of, "I wonder what happens to her when I die. They have to figure that out. You can't ignore it anymore. It's like being in high school, where you're like, real life is never going to happen. Years go by and you're like, oh, I actually have to become an adult. I have to be independent. I have to do life by myself." I think that's kind of what she's dealing with. She's like, nope, we'll coast. He's like, nope, we have to figure it out. She says, "I think it's about her learning to be independent and how she views that and what that means to her. It's more of a question of the stability of the relationship in her eyes."
Yeah, that kind of reinforces what I was saying before, that it's pretty clear that they decided this year to really focus on that relationship and try to mine it for good storytelling potential. And I think they're doing an awesome job.
They're doing an awesome job. I love those two Carries. They're so cute. this next one is from The Guardian. And this was an interview with Aubrey Plaza that they did. I think she's so great. So it starts out, they say, "Is she alive or dead, good or evil, human or mutant?" She says, "That's a really, really good question." before saying that Lenny Busker, I did not know her last name was Busker in that show, began as a human woman, then became trapped in a dimension of Haller's mind and has now been stranded by the evil Shadow King on the astral plane. "It's a total mindfuck," says Plaza. "It's mentally and physically exhausting to not exist as a human. At the end of the day, I would just feel like nothing, just this ragdoll that's been thrown around." She says she didn't do much research into the subject of mental illness and prep for the role. Instead, she stresses the way the show mines horror from the disorienting nature of mental distress. "What is real? What is not real? It's the overall question," says Plaza. "Going mad is one of the scariest ideas for me. To not trust your own mind is a really frightening idea." Plaza was asked how it feels to play a character whose gender seems so ambiguous. "I love it," she says. "There's a fluidity to Lenny, and I just think it's more interesting playing a character that's not so identifiable. It's really fun to decide how someone like that moves and looks. It's allowed me to do whatever I want.
Yeah, what did she say this time? Something about...
Oh, so the girls I used to bang would say,
yeah,
or something.
She said, "I'm Lenny, she of the Great Escape," says every girl I ever banged.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because is she just talking from the point of view of a lesbian, or is there still some of that weirdness that, you know, she was... that David thought she was someone who was a guy before?
Yeah, she talks a little bit
or
about
she's
that.
Or she just has a mouth on her.
Yeah, she says, "I think it's really interesting when you have a character like that pitted against someone like David Howler. That dynamic was always really interesting to me because I feel like Lenny has a sexual energy to her, but it's not always a feminine energy. It's more kind of masculine. At times it feels like they're just friends, and at times it feels like there's some kind of attraction there."
And we also don't know if she's always got the same consciousness, because it seems like sometimes she's just another manifestation of the Shadow King. So that's a little thing where I'm not so sure even they know what the hell is going on, which bugs me a little bit, but I hope they do. Because, you know, like when they were walking through the hallway disintegrating people, she didn't seem like Lenny there, but what? Maybe she was Lenny. I don't know.
Right. The next one that we have is from Digital Spy, and this was taken from a snippet of an interview with Dan Stevens, a.k.a. David Howler. So Dan Stevens has revealed he wants Legion fans to be totally confused by the scope of the show. Well, he got his wish, because I'm confused. The actor who plays David Howler in the X-Men TV spinoff has opened up about embracing the madness of the series. He says, "Yeah, it's a little bit giving myself up to the madness, and that's part of the ask to the audience as well. Everybody's like, I don't know what's happening. It's like, well, you shouldn't know what's happening 1 hour into an 11-hour story. We want to take you on this really trippy route, and if we give everyone too many answers 1 hour in, that would be a bit dull. So we're looking to intrigue and take you on a trip."
So shut up.
Yeah, quit griping. People just hop on and enjoy the ride. That's what I keep telling people. I mean, to me, it's just the best thing that you can say. But he also opened up about David's ongoing battle with the Shadow King. He says, "Well, that's the question. Is he free of the Shadow King? He's supposedly been expelled from David, but it's still going to involve a confrontation from that, and what that means, and how David is now defined without him, having been occupied for so long. So that's a big question, and in episode 2, we see a face-to-face confrontation for the first time, and that definitely evolves as the season goes on." So I like how at least they're admitting, you know, like, yeah you're supposed to be a little bit nutty nuts.
On the other hand, I mean, even just the 3 episodes that we've done so far, there's a lot that we don't know, but just talking it out really helps me understand what is going on that we are supposed to understand at this point. Like when I watch a TV show and I don't have a podcast on it, I miss so much because I'm just not focused in enough. I'm not paying enough attention. So I think it does help. I mean, it is good to enjoy the ride, but it also helps just figure out what they're getting at so far in the story to talk it out.
Absolutely. Well, that's why we have a podcast for it. So people can watch it and then listen to us, and hopefully we help figure it out
a little bit. Or if you know more than we do, you can write in and set us straight.
Please. I welcome it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Help me figure it out.
Yeah, that'll just make the podcast better if you guys write in and say, you know, give your theories or whatever.
Absolutely. That's it for the news.
Awesome. I had one more piece. I just happened upon this. I don't know how, because it happened a while back, but it was at San Diego Comic-Con. And this actually touches on what Legion is in the comics and might become in the future of the show. So if you don't like any spoilers, by the way, if you didn't know, our podcast has chapters, and most podcast apps, you can just skip right ahead to the next chapter. But if you don't have that, then I would just, if you don't want to hear any spoilers at all, it's kind of a general thing, but you could also just skip ahead a minute or so. But here we go. So he says, "We haven't even really scratched the surface of the number of characters or entities that are contained within Legion. The Shadow King was obviously one of them and a large part, but there's a lot more going on, and anyone who knows the comics knows the scope of the world in which it's set. So yeah, there's a lot more to dig out of his head." I've been hinting at that, hearing whispers, hearing him talk to himself, you know, and so I'm excited to hear him say that, because I really want them to go in that direction where there's basically a lot of people inside there, and some of them are not so nice.
No, No, as I was reading a little bit about the comic book character and how he like becomes, I guess, Legion, and you feel like that's essentially maybe where they're, you feel like that's where we're going to end up eventually. We don't know how long the show is, hopefully for a little while longer because it's so fantastic. But, you know, we don't call David Legion, but the show is called Legion.
Yeah. We don't even know why it's called Legion now. Like, right. What does Legion have to do with anything?
Exactly. So, you know, right now it doesn't mean anything unless you know some of the story of the comic book and the history about it. So it doesn't make sense to someone, you know, just coming in not knowing about it, which is fine. You don't have to. That's what makes it really great, because even if you really don't know a whole lot about it, you can come into it and still enjoy it. But I'm really interested to see if that's where it's going to go, because he has all this other stuff. It seems like not just what he's currently dealing with, but yeah, he's got these voices and he's hearing these things. And mm-hmm. I know he's talking to himself, and his it's like his British self is responding, but I feel like there's more going on in there. So
yeah. And here's the thing that in the comics that I think is really interesting that I hope they bring into the show. So this is even just a little bit more spoiler than what I've said so far. And that is, if I remember right, it's been a while, but in the comics, he has many personalities in there, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them can come to the fore and be in control at different mm-hmm. times. So he's basically a different person, you know, like your classic, what you think of as multiple personality disorder. I don't even know if that's true. I think it's kind of a myth, but anyways, maybe it's true. But in the comics, like, he'll be a different person, will be in control of him, and each personality has a different power. So what his superpowers are depends on who's in control of his body at the moment.
Mm-hmm. That's so my really, understanding.
Yeah, that was the character that I, you know, I mean, I love the show, and I'm happy with the way they've done it, but I want to see them get to that at some point. I think that'll be super cool.
It would be super cool.
I know, Laura, if you're listening, please write in and tell me if what I just said was right. She knows the X-Men comics.
She does. Yeah. We depend on Laura so much for some of that stuff for Marvel and in the comics.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to listener feedback. Do you want to do the first one?
Yeah. So the first one's from Steve Brown. He says, the carry of my butt line made me laugh both times. It was sweet seeing the Carrie and Carrie relationship in this episode. It's already episode 3. I wanted to see David crush Farouk's skull as predicted by future Sid.
I know. You think we'll see that?
I don't know. If she said it happens when he sees her in
a couple of weeks or something.
She's like, in a week. You do it about a week from now. So it's like, is the whole show going to take place in a week? Are we going to see an ending to this? It seems like quite a tight timeline. It's possible. I mean,
yeah. I would imagine if he does kill the Shadow King, then we might get to see this evil that he becomes, if we're right about predicting that. So maybe that would be another couple episodes or something.
Right.
Okay, Elizabeth Nikolaevich says, the story right now is one big feckin' mess and at a dead stop. Someone must hold the key for the story to move on. She's talking about how the monk came and didn't really accomplish anything, and, you know, David's trying to find the body and can't, and just people are kind of stuck. She says, the episode felt like a fractured maze with David, the only sanity in all the insanity. What a long, strange trip it is.
I agree. It can be.
Let's see. Yeah. He's looking for the body still. And yeah, you're right. It is kind of at a stop right now. The challenge in front of him is trying to help Sid, I think, which is basically the most important thing to him.
Yeah. He trusts Sid and wants to help her, but will he be helping her?
Well, yeah. I mean, just helping her get out.
Helping her get out. Well, I'm thinking of when Farouk was talking about if David continues on doing what he's doing, he's essentially killing his future Sid.
Right. Yeah. Like, what if you had some really horrible things happen in your life, and all of a sudden you could go back and talk to one of your friends and tell them to do just one little thing that would prevent it all, but then you might snuff yourself out of existence. Would you do it?
I don't know that I would go back and change a whole lot, just based on, I don't know what changing something, what one little thing can have such a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. What, you know? I mean, it sounds like there's a huge apocalypse and most of the world's dead in Sid's future.
Yeah. I think as long
I
as
think
he's
it
got
would be worthwhile.
Sid, if he's got like his current Sydney, then I think it's worth this sacrifice of whatever
yeah,
he needs to do.
But
to,
from Sid's point of view, future Sid, if she's like, well, you know, all my friends are dead. I only have one arm. You know, maybe even that evil that did this all is still out there. So I can go back and tell somebody to fix this, but then this version of me may be gone. It might be worth it in that case to prevent all that horror. I think I would do it.
Well, because she's trying to save more lives, because he's like, well, you know, didn't Farouk kill people? She's like, he killed some, but this thing kills everything or destroys everything.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, trying to say, well, it's worth maybe losing a few versus the many.
Yeah, but my point is that if she does this successfully, then this version of her may never exist. So she'll be saving a lot of pain and suffering, but at the expense of her own existence.
Right. I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
Next one is from my girl, Kristen Howell. She says, has there been any discussion of the possibility that David is trapped in his own maze? His core desire is to be the hero and have the sanity to fix everyone and the world. Who can save him if this is the case? Being trapped inside Sid to save her could be his eventual way out. But this is only if he is the one trapped, and this is all a manifestation of him still in that ball he was sucked into last season. I feel like I'm not smart enough or high enough to watch this show. One of these things is essential, but I'm not sure which.
So I guess she's saying that all of this is happening inside David's head, and so he can be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sounds like it.
I think it'd be awesome if there was some kind of huge twist like that where nothing is as it has seemed, but the show didn't really do that last season, and so I kind of think it's probably not going to do it again this season. There's some things we don't quite understand, but I feel like the show has a pretty clear spine to it, but I don't know. It would be interesting if we did get a huge twist like that. I would like it.
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting twist. I can't predict this show for shit, because every time I think I have one thing, maybe one tiny little detail figured out, it totally like turns around on me. So I give up. I just love it in the meantime.
So we got one email from Abby Helminiak. She says, I'm listening to your chapter 10 episode recap, and you mentioned future Sid not having a glove on when her and David met again. Did you notice that the tips of some of her fingers were black, and the blackness appeared to be moving up towards her hand as if it was spreading? I almost didn't see it, but I took a second look, and sure enough, it was there. Could this be the plague's effect? Love your podcast and loved chapter 10. Have a great week.
Oh,
I didn't
notice
that, did you?
No, I did not notice that. It took me, I watched the episode like almost five times, and it took me that long to even notice. It wasn't even until Aaron pointed it out that her arm was missing.
I know, so, I didn't either, I know.
I definitely did not miss it.
I can't not see it now, though.
Well, yeah, oh yeah, now that it's been pointed out to me, it's completely obvious, and I thought, God, you're an idiot. How did you not see that?
It was
right
dark
in your face.
Yeah.
But
no, I didn't notice the starkness.
I did not notice that. But this is why I love when people write in, because they're so. This is what makes Noah Hawley and the rest of the folks that make this show so brilliant. The way that there's all these details, finite details that you can miss so much. You can watch it 2 and 3 times and still not pick up on this stuff. I did not notice, but I'm going to go back and look now. What I love about when people write in. Okay, so next email that we have from Ken. He says, hey guys, I'm curious if I missed something this season, but what is the deal with the large floating green hands in the background of many of the outdoor real world scenes?
Of stuff I never noticed.
I don't know how you missed this one. I really don't. I don't think we've seen them in any scenes that take place within a character's mind, only in the real world. They look like hot air balloons in shape of those number one fan foam fingers. Sometimes they are blatantly pointing at David. Other times they are pointing off in the distance. Maybe they are just a stylistic touch, but I imagine they have more significance. Any input? He says, I enjoy the show. Keep it up. Yeah, thanks, Ken. I did.
What do you think?
I did have this in my notes in the previous episode, because that was whenever, I think it was when Sydney was in the cat, and David was on the went out into the rooftop, right, and was talking, yes, to her, yeah, and it was outside. And yeah, I did notice them. I don't know. I do agree, though. It looks a lot like sometimes David will be, the way that they shoot a scene with David, it looks like there's two pointing like right down at him, but then other times it's pointing off into the distance, and I don't know the direction or what it means, but I feel like they are there for a reason because it seems too random, you know, for them to, you know.
I think just as a guess, that it's saying here is the guy that fucks up the world, and it might also have something to do with that little segment that we had in that episode about changing green means go and red means stop, but the colors red and green are mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's like red
instead of
red,
like,
means if green really means stop, it's like stop this guy,
stop,
or something,
stop this
like
guy
that.
Yeah, maybe.
Or this guy is, and also red is often associated with evil, like, you know, devil or whatever, so
mm-hmm.
now it's green, but if it was reversed,
that's a
something
good
like that
theory. Yeah, but it does seem to, I feel like they do mean something that could, I think that's a, as good of a theory as any others. I haven't really seen a whole lot of chatter about those, but I do feel like they mean something for them to be there.
Yeah, yeah,
I like that email.
I think so, for sure. There's a lot of little details like that that usually have either some kind of meaning or they're just aesthetically cool, but this doesn't seem like an aesthetics thing. Big giant green hand pointing at David.
I agree. I think they're serving a purpose.
All right. That's our show, episode 11. Thanks for listening, everybody. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. So if you use another podcast app besides iTunes or Apple Podcasts, you may need to subscribe to us manually. You're probably not hearing us on that app right now because I'm not sure we're on those because of the way that this podcast was handed over. So if you want to subscribe manually, there's usually a way inside the app to manually input a podcast URL, and I will put ours in the show notes, but I'll tell it to you right now. It's legioncast.libsyn.com/RSS. So that's legioncast.libsyn.com/RSS. Let me know if you have any trouble with that. If you're not able to get us in your app, you can send me an email and I will help you with it. Also, I just want to reiterate, if you want to be a part of this conversation on this podcast, if you want to write in an email, post on Facebook where, you know, people post after each episode and you can talk to each other or talk to us, then we'll read a lot of that on the podcast. Or you can email us a voice memo from your phone and we might play it on the podcast. So that's really cool if you guys want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do want to get in touch, you can send that email or voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
And you can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And that's where every week we'll put up a post about that week's episode that you can respond to. And be sure to check out our other shows at podcastica.com too.
Yeah.
All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening. Oh, fudge.